I'm Amanda McNulty, and I am a Clemson Extension agent, and I also have responsibilities with Making It Grow, and we're calling our podcast that we do for Making It Grow Extra. And with me today is my friend and fellow Extension agent, Laura Lee Rose, who is stationed down in Beaufort. Laura Lee, I know you have a big interest in native plants, and one reason that we do that is because we want to encourage pollinators. And so let's talk about attracting pollinators, which will involve native plants, but also there's certain, we don't want people to feel like there's not an imported plant, that all imported plants are bad, because some of those also can help support pollinators.
Right. Imported plants are not bad. The only a few are that have no predators, or they produce a whole bunch of seed and they take over places that native plants should be. So
the privet is in full bloom right
privet
now.
Privet is in
one of the absolute worst.
And you know, just and the Bradford pear, they're just so there's some that are just absolute thugs. But we have some native plants that can be thuggy too.
Yeah,
so there's no denying that. But the insects and the native plants have evolved, co-evolved over time so that there's a balance there.
Mm-hmm.
And the native plants provide not only they provide food for animals, but they also are food themselves. The leaves are food parts for many of the caterpillars and moths that we have here. So having those plants around, at least 70% of the landscape and should be native plant cover.
Is that a good guideline?
That's a good guideline. They did a study, I think it was Audubon, did a study up around metropolitan Washington, D.C., and they found that the chickadees, if they had 70% native plant cover, they could raise a brood.
I just read that for them to bring up a clutch, it took between 3,000 and 6,000 caterpillars.
It's a lot of trips for mama and daddy.
And so, of course, the closer the food source is,
right,
the better off those birds are, and that's one reason that we're seeing this tremendous decline in the backyard birds.
Well, when new neighborhoods come in and they completely clear cut the whole shrubs and trees that were there and then bring in non-native species, mm-hmm, that's when we're in trouble.
Yeah,
so,
boxwood, English holly, one thing after another, the list is interminable, and those are the kind of the things that people expect to see and that are pretty easy to grow here.
But we still, we still want to have our camellias, we still want to have our azaleas, we still want to have our hydrangeas and daylilies and things that are non-native, but also not invasive.
Yes, and to find ways to incorporate and pick out some areas of your yard. One of the things that you can do, Laura Lee, is just, let's say this is going to be the flower bed that's a different flower bed. And a lot of the native plants, the herbaceous ones, can be perennial herbaceous ones, the ones that just bloom and bloom and bloom and bloom and bloom, and are pretty easy to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a big fan of having just swaths of things that where you're sort of, you have a limited number of plants, but is something that can just fill in an area.
And I think you hit on a real important part there, because they say that when the animals, the insects and all, are looking for things, if you have a large group of one, that's easier for them to spot.
Mm-hmm.
So we always say that it's better to plant in groups, but in this case, to try to attract them and really let them come and feast, mm-hmm, in your yard, it's particularly important to do that. So don't want to have one of everything.
That's right.
We all, and we gardeners are terrible about that, but we have to practice some.
Right. Plant in drifts. And another thing, too, is that in nature, there are no bare spots. You know, we don't have bare areas. There's some little ground cover or some little native grass that's going to grow wherever there's a bear area. So as gardeners, we shouldn't feel like, you know, that everything has to be completely manicured, that we can leave some of those native grasses. For instance, there's a beautiful little butterfly called the Carolina satyr, and the host plant for that is crabgrass. So
who would have thought it?
So even our crabgrass has an important part in nature.
Well, and actually, there are some reasons for bare spots, in that a lot of, let's talk a little bit about the solitary bees.
Well,
because don't they often need kind of a sketchy area? I mean,
they
it
do.
Doesn't have to be completely bare, but they need an area where they can, if the soil type is light enough, do they excavate and lay their eggs in
the
burrows?
They do. And the bees will excavate and use pollen in her nest, so that where there's an egg, there'll be a little pollen spitball,
uh-huh,
and then another egg and another pollen spitball. The wasp, when they dig underground, they use prey, some kind of an animal. So
they've anesthetized or paralyzed,
right,
but it's fresh meat for them.
Right.
But the little solitary bees, often there may be a couple of hundred together, but that's just because the conditions are right for them. Is
right.
that correct?
They're not social animals, but they don't mind being around each other,
mm-hmm,
and so they will nest in bare spots on the ground. And a lot of times it's a south facing slope too, so that they get that morning sun.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other plants that have hollow stems, and a lot of the bees, the solitary bees, will nest in those hollow stems. So we can buy mason bee houses, but we can also use
plant elderberry,
yeah, uh-huh, and also the verbena. That crown beard,
really?
The yellow
That's
crown beard,
one.
It has a hollow stem,
uh-huh,
too.
Yeah.
And then Leucothoe,
yeah,
called pipe stem. So
I did not know that. Oh, what fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Leucothoe, or Agarista, they call it now, that's such a wonderful plant, too, because it's an ericaceous plant, and it has the little bell-shaped flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing probably some of the little bees, like the blueberry bee, and some of those, mm-hmm, may also pollinate that one.
Yeah, and go to it and enjoy that tubular flower,
uh-huh,
and take the nectar,
uh-huh,
while they're there. And a lot of these plants are real easy to grow because, as you said earlier, it all occurred during coevolution, and that means that nobody was around spraying fungicides and putting out fertilizer.
Right.
If you choose the right plant for the location you've got, it probably will do well.
Yeah, and, you know, as a proponent of native plants, we always say that you're going to be using less pesticides and fertilizers, and if it's a plant that is established, then you should use less water, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is important because that's just part of, you know, we have those long times in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you ride by, and even some of the old foundation plants that I think are important, the Asian azaleas and the camellias, I often see pollinators on those.
Oh, yeah. The big old bumblebees,
yeah,
will get inside of an azalea and just,
yeah,
buzz all around.
And you know, we can... You and I know on the back roads, we see homesteads that have been abandoned for decades and decades where some of those old plants are still growing.
Oh, gosh. And my mother-in-law came down to my house when we first were landscaping and brought sacks, garbage bags full of azalea, little rooted azalea stems,
uh-huh,
and some grass too, and we planted those. I planted them too close to the trees because they were so small. I had no idea they were going to be 8 feet tall. This was before I studied horticulture, but and those, I have no irrigation at my house, and those plants are still just thriving.
And the camellias, a bird expert at DNR told me that he watches the rufous hummingbird, which overwinters here, doesn't nest here, go into them and realize there's a lot of nectar in, I'm not talking about the ones that are all fancy and the peony type, but the old ones where you can see the stamens, that they go in there and that there's a lot of nectar. And I actually, Laurie, have gone and pulled some apart and found that glistening structure substance and got it on my fingers and licked it, and it is just plain nectar. You can see why they like nectar so much. And, you know, so I think there are lots of ways for us to reimagine our landscape, not have it look messy, not upset our neighbors, and yet have it be tremendously exciting for native insects and birds.
Because the birds don't feed their babies bird seed. They feed them little bugs and worms. So we got to have those bugs and worms.
As I always say, would you rather eat a caterpillar or a roach? That's just no question. But hopefully we don't have to eat either one. Because you did another
part. Chocolate covered. It might just be fine.
Oh, goodness. All righty. Well,
Joe Kulin will love us.
Thank you, Laurie. We appreciate having you come and talk about this topic with us.
Thank you. I've loved being here.